with the first pick.
Welcome to the first ever episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am one of the co-hosts, Corey Kinnon, and I'm here with my other co-host, Devin Jackson. This has been a long time in the making. We started a podcast 2 years ago. Some professional developments got in the way. We got one episode in, had to can it. 2 years later, here we are. Devin, how does it feel to finally be back?
Well, man, we got to give the people what they want. This is a combination that I've been looking forward to. And as we've, you know, announced that we're starting this back up, everyone seems to be excited as well. So like I told you, you know, off air and just leading up to this, I love talking ball. You love talking ball. I think, you know, it's going to be I'm not going to even like, you know, compare it to like some other ones, but I think this one is going to be unique because like we both see the game differently. But at the same time, we have kind of that same drive to create the unique content, the content that people want to see. You know, we, you know, get straight to the point. We're not fluffing, you know, it's just straight ball talk when, you know, whenever we log on to social media and just talk about the NFL draft. So, super excited to get this back going. And, you know, it's been a couple months for me since I've done a podcast, man. You know, did the one with Mike Kernishan for a while, but he stepped away from, you know, covering football. And really since then, I just kind of been flowing in the ether. So it's nice to.
Heck yeah. And what a better time to do it than conference championship weekend. So again, we discussed like, oh, well, when's the best time to launch this thing? You know, this was a few weeks ago and, you know, it just turns out, you know, When the weather turns cold, the draft starts ticking up. The draft starts warming up. So, what better time to start than the conference championships weekends? We've got quite a few big games. And what better way to start by talking about those games than to talk about the playoff selection committee and kind of the leveraging I think they did with 5 and 6 Ohio State, Alabama, but also what it means for TCU, what it means for USC, two teams who, you know, haven't been to the playoffs before, now control their own destiny.
Yeah, it's, you know, the committee has an agenda and they're going to get the teams that they want in, even if the resume doesn't necessarily match the ranking. So I'm not surprised that Bama is at 6. I would say at 5 makes sense. You know, they, you know, we're the number two team going into that game against Michigan and they lost. So it makes sense they moved down a couple spots. But man, Alabama at 6 it's certainly hinting towards a big move coming in TCU or USC or maybe even both end up losing on Saturday. So I understand it. You know what? They're not hiding it. I'm happy that they're finally kind of owning up to admitting that they have their own inherent biases, but for USC and TCU makes the pressure even mount even more because TCU could, you know, they're looking to go undefeated. They only will have one loss, but yet they are going to be on the outside looking in if they lose. And then you look at USC already lost to Utah this year. I think the committee, if USC came into this weekend undefeated, I think there's probably a good chance they still make it in if they lost. But, you know, they lost to Utah already, losing to them twice. That obviously will eliminate them as well. But, man, I want to see Caleb Williams ball, man. I want to see him in that playoff atmosphere. And I'm already dreaming of a Michigan versus USC scenario where you have Mike Morris chasing around Caleb Williams. You have J.J. McCarthy trying to go toe-to-toe. I mean, that's a fascinating matchup, potential matchup, assuming everything runs its course. But it's going to be exciting, man, to see it all unfold. There's so many prospects within all of these games. You know, every single championship game for the Power 5, and even some of the Group of 5 games, they have prospect-on-prospect matchups I'm looking forward to. So it's going to be an exciting weekend, but we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, for me, what I saw is the committee said Alabama at 2 losses I don't see how they obviously they can't hop Ohio State right now, like because neither team is going to play this weekend, and the committee's already decided Alabama's two losses are worse than Ohio State's one loss. That's not going to change. So that's going to be interesting. It's never happened. Two Big Ten teams getting in before. That'd be wild. That'd be nuts. But if both of those teams lose, if both TCU and USC lose, which TCU they played a close game with K-State already. It was a 10-point game in October. And again, as you said, USC's already lost to Utah once this year, so that's their one loss. So it's going to be a fascinating weekend to watch. Devin, I don't know if we need to go to each of these championship games and break down every single game, but tell me some of the specific matchups that you're most looking forward to in this weekend.
Yeah, so I'm gonna start off a little bit different. I know everyone wants to look at maybe the SEC championship. They have a great edge on tackle matchup there, but I'm gonna go to the Mountain West. I love some Mountain West football, man. And two dudes in this game that I've been on since last year and saw their draftable talent: Jalen Skinner, excuse me, JL Skinner, and Jalen Moreno Cropper in this game, and it's going to be fascinating. I don't think those two are going to be matched up a ton, but those are two playmakers on either side of the ball. Obviously, Jake Haener, has some fans out there. Probably one of those later, maybe day three guy, maybe UDFA type player. But when I look at Cropper and look at Skinner, those are two dudes I think could go in the first two, three rounds. And I'm really excited to see them play. Last time they played in a regular season, Haener was hurt. So obviously Boise won that game comfortably. But someone that X factor in this game, I would say, is Talen Green, the redshirt freshman quarterback for Boise. 6'4", like 220, 230. Very, very fast, dual threat athlete. He's really connected on the deep ball a ton as well. So I think that's going to be the X factor in this game. But Cropper and Skinner are certainly the headline for me when it comes to that game.
Yeah, we'll get into the big games, I'm sure, in much more detail. But I'm also like, and it's not even a 2023 NFL draft matchup that I'm excited about when I'm talking about the MAC championship. But Daquan Finn and Curtis Rourke are both like dynamite football players to watch. And they've both been hurt pretty recently. So I haven't checked their status for the championship game. But if both those players are healthy and playing, the MAC championship game has the ability to be a lot of fun between Daquan Finn and Curtis Rourke.
Yeah, they put up a lot of points. I believe Ohio has a receiver from Ohio State that transferred in there as well. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I know a lot of the Ohio State guys. I think they actually went to an Ohio game, on some of them action as well. I saw Marvin Harrison and I think Jackson Smith and Jigba were there supporting him, so that's something to watch as well. But Daquan Finn is a lot of fun. He had a really, really nice performance against Ohio State earlier this year. So he's certainly someone to watch out for this weekend. I think he's healthy and playing because I believe he played the last couple weeks. O'Rourke, I'm not too sure about, but if they're both healthy, it's going to be a lot of points scored in that game. Looking at some of the Power Five matchups that we kind of alluded to, I kind of take my mind to the SEC championship. B.J. Ojulari against Broderick Jones. I think that's going to be fascinating. Or Allie Gay as well, who just picked up a Senior Bowl invite. You really got the speed and twitch ability of Ojulari going against Broderick Jones, who he's someone that's powerful and really I think could be at the top of the tackle class, but you got to worry about his balance. Something me and you noted about his game. So I'm very interested to see if he's able to handle both Gay and Ojulari. They're both kind of different styles of pass rushers. So I'm very interested to see in that game in particular, of course, how that's going to go. And then the battle of the running backs. Georgia does it by committee versus Harold Perkins, who really has burst on the scene as a true freshman for LSU. He's been probably their one of, if not their best, defensive player down the stretch of the season. So that game there has a couple interesting matchups, especially for in the trenches that I'm really looking forward to.
Ojulari is a player. When I turned on his 2022 tape, and I was like, That's BJ Ojulari, because his body transformation from last year to this year is unbelievable. That dude has rocked up this summer. Like his body type is noticeably different from 2021 to 2022. It's bizarre. And again, he's fluid, he's flexible, he's long, got those big levers, and he knows how to use them. So again, we're kind of on the same page with Broderick Jones. The tools are you can drool over those tools. Like DeBrickishaw Ferguson was the comp I saw the other day, and I get it. I get it. But again, he's still a little clunky with his technique. His arms are a little out of control. So he, you know, I don't think his feet are the cleanest as they can be. Even if he does have all the mobility, all the foot speed in the world, I think there's a lot of room for him to clean up his game, and he's going to get drafted in the first round if he comes out regardless. But how he can handle a guy like Ojulari, how he can handle a guy like Gay is going to be a lot of fun. And again, we got a lot to talk about with USC because, you know, we'll hit on some 2024 quarterbacks who could go first overall this year if they were eligible. But my favorite matchup is in this game. We've got a potential top corner in the class in Clark Phillips II going up against the reigning Biletnikoff winner in Jordan Addison. Like it does not get better than that. And I understand that saying Clark Phillips has potential to be the top cornerback in the class is a little bit of a hot take because it's a pretty darn good corner, but he's a dog. Clark Phillips is a dog. And so this is going to be a battle for 60 minutes. I hope they let him follow. I hope they let him follow Addison because that's going to be a world of fun.
Oh,
Although, I mean, USC's got a ton of receivers, so I don't know if they can afford to let him follow, but because Mario Williams could burn you too. So, but it's going to be fun to watch.
yes, yeah, it's that has got to be the must-see matchup of the weekend. And when you think about it, man, Jordan Addison went out of that first game early. You know, I think like towards the end of the third or fourth quarter, he went out of that game. So USC and Caleb Williams was basically doing it, you know, kind of by himself because it injuries starting to pile up. They have a linebacker, Eric Gentry, who I'm very fond of, 6'6" guy. I don't know how he's playing straight up linebacker, playing Mike sometimes for a USC defense, but he's got some talent for sure. And he got hurt too in that game. So I'm very interested to see on a neutral field how both these teams will kind of handle the pressure. For me, I've been super impressed with USC. You know, obviously Caleb Williams has the special splash plays, but to me, I think what's been most impressive about it is even when the game is tight, he's just a cool customer, man. Like, if you need him to hit the hole shot, he got you. You know, if you need him to get 5 yards, he's gonna do it. I think my favorite moment probably of the year for USC is Caleb Williams. I think it was like for 4th and 6 or 7 against Oregon State on the road. He scrambles and he's short of the first down. This entire offensive lineman pushes him for the first down. And to me, it's like, I know the talent is there. He gets the Mahomes comps. You know, people say he throws it like Mahomes, plays like Mahomes. I'm not gonna go that far, but he's the best college football player and probably the best quarterback in college football right now. And he's must-see TV, and I think Utah is not going to have an answer for them on Saturday or on Friday night, excuse me.
Yeah, it's a cliche every year. You'll see it on Twitter. You'll hear it. People say, ah, this quarterback, like especially quarterback needy teams, fans of him, they'll say, ah, this class isn't that good. Let's wait till next year. You know, this year, I don't know if I believe in Bryce or CJ. Let's wait till let's tank for Caleb next year. Next year's going to come by, and somebody's going to say, ah, you know, I don't know about Caleb. Let's wait till next year. But when we talk about Caleb Williams, we're talking about a different animal. Like, yeah, I can get it. There's a couple of big 2024 quarterbacks who are playing this weekend, Caleb Williams and Drake May from North Carolina as well. So, and I think it bears the conversation to talk about where would these guys be aligned if they were draft eligible? I think it's pretty easy to say Caleb Williams would be the first overall pick in a heartbeat. I think it's easy to say that guy's probably going to walk home with the hardware in New York in a couple weeks. Like, I don't think there's a better player in college football than Caleb Williams.
Yeah, he's certainly gonna take home the hardware unless something just disastrous happens on Friday night. I don't foresee it.
Yeah, I don't either. It's amazing to me. Like, Bryce Young is a very good facilitator outside of structure. He's a very good creator out in chaos. He's a very good creator in chaos. And so is Caleb. But the way Caleb does it, I've never seen such like, it's like the game is still moving very slow for him, even when everything is chaotic around him. Like Bryce is, yeah, he's still moving. He's still doing what he's got to do. But the demeanor of Caleb, it's like the game's moving really slow for him as he's creating, as he's backpedaling, he's stepping up in pockets. He's creating outside of structure. I haven't seen anything like it in recent years. So Caleb's a tremendous talent that would go first overall this year. He would have gone easily first overall last year, would go first overall next year. As we stand today, injuries always, crappy injuries always happen. But we got to talk about Drake May too from North Carolina. And I don't know where you stand with Drake. Drake's obviously really good, but obviously this conversation is where would they be if they were draft eligible today?
Right.
Drake is really good. Caleb's on another level. Do you see Drake outside of the CJ Bryce Young tier, or do you think, I think if he were eligible this year, we'd probably be mixing him up in there? Because for me, I say like, yeah, Drake's really good. Drake's a special talent, but so is CJ, so is Bryce. Does he do something that makes you say, oh yeah, if Drake was eligible this year, he'd go first overall pick over CJ at Bryce?
I don't think so. I think for me, I think when I watch Drake May, I feel him falling in love with the wow plays. You know what I'm saying? Like some of them aren't as necessary. Like Caleb Williams can do it, and he does it sometimes out of ne necessity. Sometimes he just does it just because he know he can, knows he can. I think May sometimes gets himself in trouble doing that. Like straight up in the pocket, he delivers it all over the field. There's no problem. He has patience, he has a touch. He's already starting to look off safeties, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, it's like there's a slight recklessness to Drake May's game that I don't quite see in Caleb Williams, if that makes sense. Like May, like he knows he can take chances, but there are times where he can just make the simple play, but he gets a little too greedy sometimes. And all the gunslinger type quarterbacks do. And then of course you got the issue of Phil Longo's offense. Like, is
Absolutely, you
that
do.
sustainable? Like, is he going to regress next year? Because he's not gonna have Josh Downs. And what is that going to look like? Even I think Antoine Green as well, he's a senior. What is that going to look like? And that's the same thing. I feel like we're saying the same things we said about Sam Howell to a certain degree.
Right. He
And I
lost
don't know
Ya'Mi
if that's
Brown. He
completely
lost Daz
fair,
Newsome.
but
He lost Michael Carter. He lost all those guys. Yeah.
yeah, I don't know
Yeah.
if it's fair, but I think May will probably be right outside of that CJ and Bryce bracket. But I still think he'll be a first round guy. Because you got to take the tools, but I think there's still a little bit of concern with some of the things he does down to down.
Yeah, I think he's probably firmly in that CJ Bryce bracket. But like when I'm grading prospects, like there's a difference between a first round grade and a blue chip prospect. You know what I'm saying? And I'm pretty sure you're similar to that. Like Caleb is as blue chip as it gets right now. Like Caleb is, we haven't had a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence where everybody knew the moment Trevor Lawrence even stepped a toe on Clemson, that guy's going first overall in 3 years. Like everybody knew it, like immediately. And I think Caleb's kind of in that same realm. Maybe not that polarizing where Trevor Lawrence was obviously the best quarterback in the nation and carried like a moxie and this like persona that came with him everywhere he went, like as soon as he stepped on campus at Clemson. But Caleb is a blue chip, and I don't think there's a blue chip quarterback in this class. And so I think that's a huge difference when talking about these guys. I think CJ and Bryce are both really good prospects. I think there's some concerns with CJ's game that have shown up, and I think there's a little bit of recklessness with Bryce's games that's shown up as well. And he takes a lot of hits he doesn't need to take. That I've never seen a quarterback take as many hits as Bryce Young takes, never. So I think there's room to see both those guys. But with Caleb, yeah, of course you have things to work on. But like as we sit today, everybody's like, yeah, that guy's going 1-1 next year. So
Yeah, I
I
mean,
think that.
yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, there's just like, you could pull probably about three plays from every game that he makes is just ridiculous. I just, I'm already thinking ahead to next year. I can already see someone saying this is not sustainable. I can already see someone saying you can't do that in NFL, and then he gets to the NFL, he does the same thing. You know, it's just already wild to you kind of project ahead. You look ahead already, and you already know there's going to be someone. You know, the helmet scouts, USC doesn't make any quarterbacks. You know, he can't, you know, stay in the pocket and deliver passes. I hear all this already, but to me, I just don't think it matters. Unless, like, he just turns the ball over like crazy next year, which I still don't see, considering they're still playing the Pac-12 and he's been carving up every single defense every single week. He's 1.1, man.
Yeah. And I think people forget he's 6'1" and 220 pounds. He's not a little dude. Like, he's not a small dude. He's dense, and he lets people know it. So, in terms of body typing, he's not the same as Bryce Young. He's not the same as why am I blanking on like some skinnier quarterbacks every year, like Lamar Jackson. He's not that type of body type. He's a big dude. So, yeah, Caleb's electric. I love it. Let's transition to a team to a con to a conference where obviously neither of these teams are playing in the Big Ten championship game. But there's quite a bit of offensive tackle talent in the Big Ten. The place to start is probably the best one, said, I'm going to go back to school. A huge shocker. Maybe it's not huge. You know, I've had the pleasure of talking to Olufoshinu out of Penn State, left tackle out of Penn State. I had the pleasure, I would say, of being pretty early to the scene on Olu as well, after his start in the bowl game last year against Arkansas. And he's very much a family guy. He's very much wired to do what's best for him and his family. And so that makes me think that, like, yeah, I think he probably already knew I'm going to finish my degree and then I'll see what's going on. But huge news regardless. This guy was kind of revered as a top 10 pick coming into this, you know, elite core strength, elite grip strength, elite foot speed. Like, this dude doesn't budge off the spot when he takes a bull rush. Like, this dude can catch outside shoulder like crazy. Like, this dude is the complete package. He's not a mover in the ground game per se, but like, as far as pass protectors go, there's not one in the country. And so with that news of him going back to school now, you know, some people had Broderick Jones, some people had Paris Johnson, Peter Skoronski. You know, there's still a lot of talent at the offensive tackle position. But for me, that was my OT1. For me, that was like, that's the guy who's going off the board first. And now it's like, oh my God, like he's not coming out. What was your reaction to that news?
Yeah, I was surprised. I did not expect that, did not see it coming really. You know, for me, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, head of Penn State for next year, they're not gonna have Fashanu, they're not gonna have Porter Jr., who just declared probably about an hour before we start recording this. I'm thinking maybe in Parker Washington maybe even looks to make the jump, but I don't know what James Franklin, you know, told him one on one. Obviously, you know, he talked with his family, but James Franklin probably sold him the farm and told him, look, you know, we got Drew Allar and we're gonna rock next year. And
That
I
was my
certainly hope
question.
so. I
Yeah, that was my
certainly hope
question,
so.
as how much does having as much freshman talent like Nick Singleton and like a Drew Allar, how much
Catron
does
Allen.
that, Catron Allen, yeah, how much does that impact an upperclassman's decision to say, you know what, I think we might be able to win the Big Ten and more next year? It's worth, I mean, Drew Allar is a guy, again, he's Northeast Ohio, same as me, so it's to have some affinity for him, but like every moment he's come into college football this year, that dude slings it. He can sling it. So we're talking about the same biometrics that Will Levis throws with that people love about Will Levis. This guy has it, except he's accurate and he's smart with the football. So I'm thrilled to watch Drew Allar next year. And I do wonder how much that young talent that Penn State has, they recruit like crazy every year, impacts a guy like a 19-year-old like Olufoshinu to say, I can wait till I'm 20. I guess he'd
Yeah,
be 21 by the time he
man,
declared it then, but.
like I said, I was surprised that he decided to come back, but I get it. This is kind of the business of college sports right now. You know, you might have the talent to make that jump, but you know, at when you think about it on paper, at least, Michigan is really going to be at the top of the line in terms of competing for the Big Ten title. Ohio State, there's going to be question marks around the quarterback next year. They're still going to have Marvin Harrison Jr. They might. I saw Brian Hartline might be making that jump to since he's interviewing for the head coach job there. So are they going to have all their pieces next year? That's a big question mark. So when I understand from that perspective, but still, I mean, he's a top 10 pick in the waiting. And it's a tough decision, man, because he's super young. He still needs to hone in a little bit, but the skill set is there. The ability is there. He checks every box that you want. And even when he enters a draft next year, he's still going to be hitting all those thresholds, age threshold especially. So I get it, but you just hope that heading to next year, he stays healthy and everything works itself out.
Yeah, that's the big thing is his health. That's the always the unknown is, things could happen always. David Ojabo popped his Achilles at his pro day. Like stuff like that happens every year. And so those are the kind of things that you just hope don't happen. But with Ola going back, there's a huge conversation about who the top tackle in the class is, or and two of them can be found in Columbus. Two of them can be found at Ohio State. DeJuan Jones is a senior, so he's coming out. I would assume Paris is probably coming out too. Maybe he has a raw like he has a bad taste in his mouth. He's never been to I guess his freshman year he did. But they've lost to Michigan. He's never beat Michigan actually, because 2020 season was COVID year and Michigan Ohio State didn't play. So how much does that play into Paris's ability? But we have a little bit of differing views on Paris Johnson Jr. versus DeJuan Jones that Bears talking to, breaking those two players down, what we like and why we each favor a different.
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with DeJuan Jones. I'm a big fan of him. In terms of what he brings to the table, skill set wise, bullying the run game. Really has that length that you really like, 36-inch arms. To me, I think even though we had this discussion offline, even though there's concerns about like letting people get into his chest, being able to counter some of those pass rush abilities. And still trying to kind of take that next step as in potential elite pass protector. You have all kind of that skill set built in there, but now it's just about consistency. And I thought just from, and I'm excited to go back and see the All 22 of the Michigan game, but I thought he didn't play as well as I thought he was going to play in that game. Just didn't play as physical as I would have liked. And for a guy of that size, I do worry about his physicality at times. Like, he'll mow dudes down, he'll take him to the sideline. He's climbing to the second level, and really doing some impressive things that you want to see in a future tackle. But then there are times where, he's getting beat, at the apex of the pass rush. He's allowing people to get into his frame, even though he has those 36-inch arms. So to me, I think there's still some technical aspects of his game that I would like to see improve. But to me, I'm a guy that bets on tools, and I'm a guy that bets on kind of some of those historical thresholds. I know there are some that, kind of pass that test that may not hit those thresholds. Obviously, Rashawn Slater is one that comes to mind. But to me, I think that there is a foundation there for DeJuan Jones to be successful at the next level. And, really kind of make that jump from being just good to really good or elite. And I think he has a skill set to do it. But to me, there are just some inconsistencies, and especially against Michigan, that may, someone that has, in my opinion, I think he has like first round tools, but I think he probably goes in that like 32 to like 40 area because of some of those inconsistencies in I don't know how well he's going to test athletically as well, too. But I think when you look at kind of the overall body of work, I think it's a guy that's certainly a top 50 player in this class. But how good is it? And I think that Michigan game could have been a chance to kind of solidify maybe he goes back in the first round.
Yeah. I mean, I like DeJuan, and apparently, obviously, there's a lot to like. Again, he's a massive dude. Was a basketball recruit coming too out of Ben Davis High School of Indianapolis at his size. And of course, 36-inch arms, like you can't teach that. He's got things you cannot teach. But, given his stature, I do see a lack of knee bend. You did mention that he lets people into his chest. So, I mean, last year he saw a lot of top shelf pass rushers in the Big Ten. You know, Arnold Ebiketie, Boye Mafe put him on in a blender week one last year. If you remember the hump move that he hit Dwan with and set him flying. Ojabo, Hutchinson, like the Big Ten had a lot of really strong pass rushers. So he kind of went through the gauntlet last year, and I didn't think he held up super well. His tape this year is a lot better. I mean, he dropped 30 pounds, you know, 30, 40 pounds this summer. It's evident. His foot speed is a lot quicker. I don't think his foot speed is necessarily elite, but it's very good for a man of his size. You know, when we're talking about foot speed, I do still think he has some of those same issues though. You know, I don't see a lot of knee bend. So, you know, letting players into his chest, struggling to protect his outside shoulder against bendy or more flexible pass rushers. Some things like that still tend to catch him. Which is why I tend to favor Paris Johnson, who right now is my offensive tackle one. Since Olu went back to school, I think Paris is the best tackle in the class. You know, he played guard for Ohio State last year, and then moved to left tackle this year with Nicholas Petit-Ferrer and Thayer Munsberg both graduating. And I think he's played really, really well with him. His grip strength is phenomenal. So when he latches, it's over. I think he drops his anchor really well. He knows, based on pre-snap looks, like, okay, you know, this guy's got long arms and he's coming at me from wide nine. I better be ready to drop my anchor pretty quickly, things like that. So I see a really good pass rush or pass blocking plan from Paris Johnson. And I think his foot speed is tremendous. His foot speed is tremendous. So I think he's got beautiful feet, a beautiful base, very, very balanced, very never gets out over his waist. So, and I think he has the ability out of most offensive tackles in this class. I like Paris's ability to create movement in the run game more than most.
Yeah, I think you make some really great points about Paris Johnson's game. We like I said, we had discussed it offline before. Obviously, we did this podcast, but yeah, I agree with you. I think to me, and I agree. I think Paris Johnson right now is certainly the better tackle than DeJuan Jones. Just when you think about everything that he brings to the table, I agree with. His ability to move people in the run game, his ability to counter in the pass game is really quick feet, ability to mirror as well. It's really impressive to kind of watch him and see him, you know, grow over the course of the season. And, you know, compared to DeJuan Jones, I think you're going to see Paris Johnson with kind of less deficiencies and less of those games where he's getting just, you know, physically beat up, you know, kind of like DeJuan Jones, like some of the tape he did last year. You know, against Ojabo and obviously Boye Mafe as well, two guys that, you know, have moved on to NFL and you know, are going to be really good contributors for their teams. So I would agree a lot with what you said about Paris Johnson. I think, you know, with Johnson, you know, I think he's going to continue to grow his game. And for me, I can't dispute that right now he's the pure better tackle between Jones and him. So I like I said about Jones, I still want to bet on those tools and you know, assume that he's going to, you know, continue to grow in his craft. But Johnson right now is, you know, arguably the best tackle best draftable tackle right now, you know, between him and Broderick Jones. I think with Jones, kind of, I don't want to say similar to DeJuan Jones, but Broderick Jones for me at the very least. A very toolsy guy, but as we talked about the balance issues and some of the clunkiness of his game, to me are going to be a little worrisome. And I think it's going to be a big test this weekend to see it against LSU and then potential matchups down the road. You know, maybe they end up playing Michigan again, and obviously got Mike Morris and some of those other guys on Michigan's defensive line that can give him some issues. So I think for Jones, you're going to see what I don't want to say what he's made of, but you're with Broderick Jones, you're going to see more tests, you know, of guys that are twitchy and bendy, but also some of the power guys as well. So I want to see how he is going to be able to handle that. Not to say that he hasn't, you know, Byron Jones from Tennessee was someone that he faced a couple of weeks ago. So this is not to say that he hasn't been tested that much this year, but I think compared to some of the other guys in the Big Ten, they have seen some a little bit more significant pass rush ability from some of their opponents.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's a fun deep tackle class. You know, Broderick, Matthew Bergeron, Blake Freeland, Anton Harrison just declared today. Jalen Duncan. You know, there's a lot of really good tackle names in this class. Kind of to wrap up the episode now, Devin. It's been a great premiere, a good pilot episode. You know, getting back into the seat here. Let's talk about three prospects, and we can alternate here, that have really caught your eye this year that, you know, maybe weren't on the radar, maybe were. I might throw out four. Who knows? I get really excited about this stuff. But just start with one, you know, a guy either, you know, he could be on the radar and you're just like, yeah, he lived up to the hype. Or, you know, this guy I didn't really know about and I turn on his tape and, yeah, he's the real deal.
I'm going to go Ivy League. Andre Isevis from Princeton. Dude can fly. And funny thing is, like, I was watching Princeton football. I know it sounds crazy to people listening right now, but I was watching Princeton football because part of my job at the Philadelphia Inquirer is, like, keep up with some dudes from Philly, and they have a linebacker that that starred at St. Joseph's Prep, you know, and now he ended up being their top tackler this year. But, you know, I got to watch Isevis play, and this is just broadcast. I haven't even seen all 22 yet, but I mean, he is just running by dudes, has track in his background, just absolutely, you know, he's one of those guys that it's going to go down to the Senior Bowl. And I think he can have a Christian Watson-esque impact where, you know, he may not be ready yet to be that guy that, you know, runs those, you know, intermediate routes with crispness. May not be that guy that is going to be able to release fluidly, but when he gets by you and stacks you, you're beat. You know, he's got that true straight line speed. So for me, the biggest thing for that I want to see, especially down at the Senior Bowl, you know, how is he going to be able to separate with guys that are going to be in his hip pocket? Is he going to be able to make some of those contested catches? Is he going to be able to handle some of the you know, the jams at the line of scrimmage? Because as good as he was at the Ivy League, you know, the NFL, you know, we got some dudes that'll beat you up at the line of scrimmage. So I want to see how he handles some of that physicality, you know, especially at the line of scrimmage, and then what he does throughout the route. But the tools are certainly there. I don't know how high his draft stock is just yet. Still kind of figuring out where exactly he's going to go. Right now, my gut tells me probably in that round 4 or 5 spot right now, just based on physical tools. But I think, you know, if he has a really good Senior Bowl week, I think maybe you see that shoot up a little bit. But he's someone that's very impressive, and getting to see him in passing and then going back and looking at the film, he was the best dude on the field at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. I have watched a lot of Isevis as well. When I was watching Isevis as well, though, like, I've seen Anthony Schwartz play a lot of football. I'm a Browns fan. The dude who from Oregon, who's the track runner who played for the Eagles in the preseason, you know, obviously didn't make the roster. I was expecting kind of the same thing with Isevis. You know, neither of those other guys are natural pass catchers. You know, they're track athletes, you know, but they look really uncomfortable running routes. They look really uncomfortable catching the football naturally. I still think Isevis is probably a lot of a straight line vertical guy. I don't see a lot of fluidity in his hips. I don't think he changes directions really well. So, kind of that same straight line track guy, but he catches the football really naturally. He's got very natural plucky hands. And so that was a pleasant surprise when I watched his tape. I probably think he's going to go day three, but he's going to get drafted based on that speed. He's going to get drafted based on that speed. So I could definitely see, you know, that 115 to 140 range somewhere in there. Somebody taking a chance on Isevis. My first guy, I'm going to go back to the Big Ten. Again, I'm a Browns fan, so I've watched a lot of defensive tackle play because their defensive tackle play is very bad. So trying to find guys to replace whoever they have in that room. There's not a more fun defense in college football this year than Illinois. Not a more fun defense. Ryan Walters, the defensive coordinator, has that team playing second in EPA per game and second in EPA per play in all of college football, behind only Marshall, who's playing at the G5 level. That unit is stacked, is loaded, and is so fun to watch. But the best player that I love watching on that team is their defensive tackle, Johnny Newton. Jerzon Newton goes by Johnny. 6'2", 280, so he's kind of squattier. You know, I think he's probably got a little bit arms on the shorter side, but he is slippery. He is strong. He understands how to win with leverage, and he's got a red hot motor. Makes him a dynamic pass rusher. Makes him just explosive in pursuit of the quarterback. He'll run sideline to sideline, tracking down a quarterback, working outside of structure. But also two gapping and anchoring a double against the run isn't lost on Newton. So I love Johnny Newton's game. He's only a redshirt sophomore. He's only 19 years old. So there's a chance he's not coming out this year. But we'll see. He's eligible. And if he does, I think he's a day two pick. He's that good. And I would love for him to be in a Browns uniform if it came to that. So just blown away by Newton's tape.
Yeah, you talked a lot about him, you know, in some of the group chats we're in, and obviously to me, haven't gotten a chance to watch him yet, but I'm definitely gonna get around to seeing what he does and just how impressive he's been this season. And seemed like every time that Illinois, flashed across the screen, it was always those slow scoring slugfest type games, and that speaks to the defensive unit they've been able to build. So definitely excited to.
They fly around, man. I mean, there's not a meaner corner in college football than Devin Witherspoon. Not a meaner corner in college football. And they've got a true freshman edge named Gabe Akis. He's the true freshman. And this dude's a dog. Like, they've all across Keith Randall. He's a fourth year sophomore, which is funny, but he's real good. I mean, that unit's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, you, I was going to say, Witherspoon just appeared in Dane's first round mock. So that just tells you how good that defense is. I'm going to stay in the Big Ten too and go with another defensive tackle. I'm going to go with Keanu Benton. He is a dude that is just impressed me every time that I've watched him. From that Wisconsin Ohio State Big Ten championship game, like few years back when he was able to make some plays, as a true freshman to now. Every time I watch him, he's flashing. He's so close to sacks. He's so close to being a dominant disruptive force. And he just needs another step, a quicker way to disengage. But I think with the NFL seeing a lot of the rushing totals, average yards per carry going up, he's going to be a valuable dude to two gap. So I think he's going to have value there to at least day two value. And I'm very interested to see what he does down at the Senior Bowl, because he's impressive on one-on-one pass reps. He's able to, get into the chest of centers and guards and, really control them and control them at the line of scrimmage. He's able to pull off some spin moves in the interior, although you probably don't want a guy that's a nose in the middle of your defense spinning. But it's very impressive from what he's able to do. Every time you sit to watch him play, every time you watch Wisconsin play, it's probably not a lot, outside of if it's the only game on. But when you go back and look at the film, you get so close to the sacks. Watch the Washington State game earlier this year. There was a few times Cam Ward almost got taken down by him. He's, right in his lap disrupting. So he's such a disruptive force. I want to see him continue to stack those moves, continue to disengage at a quicker rate, and do a better job handling double teams. I think sometimes he does, but sometimes he gets blown off the ball a little bit. You want to see him anchor a little bit better and kind of split those double teams or take on one man and kind of clog up the holes. And I think teams are going to use him for that, early on, but as he continues to develop his pass rush plan, I think he's going to be a really, really solid player in the NFL.
I think so too. I wonder if he would be better suited as like a 3-tech and a 4-3. Like, he plays a lot of shade at Wisconsin. He plays a lot of shade at Wisconsin. So I tend to wonder, because he's got long arms and he is explosive and he moves really fluidly for his size. I think his pad level creeps up at times. And so he kind of neutralizes his own leverage points, because he's got 34-inch arms. But I do wonder, man, if they just kicked him out more than he's in, how would he look? Just a little bit out. So I do have those questions about Benton, because I think the raw tools are exceptional with Keanu Benton. I could talk about another defensive tackle in Byron Young out of Alabama if I wanted to. Some of the most fun tape I've watched this entire year. That Ole Miss game, Alabama Ole Miss game, is unbelievable. I won't talk about another defensive tackle, though. I will, however, talk about an edge rusher from the Pac-12 in Leetu Luatu from USC. So Leetu Latu is a very interesting story. So he's had multiple neck injuries when he was at the University of Washington. University of Washington forced him to medically retire, to which he became a GA on their coaching staff, decided, I want to play again, got medically cleared by UCLA, transferred to UCLA, and is having an unbelievable season with the Bruins. Unbelievable season with the Bruins. Leetu Latu reminds me a lot of Jalen Phillips, which is funny because Jalen Phillips had to leave UCLA because they ruled him medically. They made him medically retire. So he had to go to Miami to get cleared. And in this case, it's UCLA clearing Leetu Latu. But just unbelievable fluidity. I like his first step a lot. His hands are extremely refined. Extremely refined. Leetu Latu is a fun player. And he's not even starting over the Murphy twins yet at this point. And I think that's probably medically, you know, for medical purposes, he's probably a rotational guy. He's probably a situational guy because of that neck. And so I do wonder how that neck is going to be viewed pre-draft because the medicals aren't great. But the same way with Jalen Phillips, where he got, you know, the concussions and that got medically cleared. He went first round. I think Leetu Latu can go top 50 if he gets cleared. Like if somebody clears his neck medically, I mean, he's got 11 tackles for loss and 9.5 sacks this year for the Bruins. And I mean, his tape is unbelievable. His pass rush plans, his ability to counter, force oversets and the fluidity to take back the inside track when he does so is just a lot of fun. So Leetu Latu is that guy for me.
Yeah, seen some clips of him. You sent me some clips. I'm extremely intrigued. Obviously, medicals, like you said, is going to be the big sticking point. But you know, certainly what he brings to the table and just the baseline and what he's able to do, the quick first step, explosiveness. It's a guy, and I'm very looking forward to watch him. Final guy I want to discuss is Virginia Tech, like nickel safety. I guess you call him a big nickel, Shamari Connor. He's a guy that, you know, played on a very disappointing team this year. But, you know, I've gotten to watch, you know, about 3-4 games from this season, even going back to last season. I was impressed with what he was able to do, you know, as a guy that they, you know, ask a lot of him. Brent Pry took over as a head coach of that program. And obviously they had a disappointing season, but they asked him to cover essentially the best slot guy that a team has. So it'll be anywhere from a small slot receiver to a big tight end. Very impressed with his physicality. He's someone that flies to the football. He's kind of built a little bit like a linebacker. Like he's built like a, one of those tweener guys, one of those tweener safety linebacker guys. So you kind of worry a little bit about where exactly he's going to fit. He's going to be down at the Senior Bowl. So I'm very interested to see where he's deployed, but to me, I think he can be a guy that matches up with tight ends. I liked him in that tight matchup the best. He had some really nice reps against Jelani Woods last year. You know, going back to someone that, you know, obviously ended up being a third round pick. He had some really good reps against Zach Kuntz, who I was high on coming into the season from Old Dominion. He really shut him down when they were matched up 1-on-1. Had some nice reps against Will Mallory as well. So he's a guy that, to me, I think he's certainly a day three guy. He has a lot of special teams snaps. I think he has over or getting close to 1,000 special team snaps in his career. So he's going to be a core special teamer. But I want to say probably his stock is a little bit around where Tyson Anderson last year's was, like in that like round 5-6 guy, someone that's going to stick around for a while. I think he's going to be a matchup dependent player. I don't love him against slot receivers. I don't love him as a true safety, but I like him as a big nickel potential, a tight end, a racer potential as well too. Has some good ball skills. Really a well-rounded player. I don't think he's going to be someone that blows you away when you watch him, but he's going to be someone that sticks around for quite some time and finds an NFL home.
I love it. I love it. I'm also going to stick with like a slot nickel kind of guy, slot nickel safety kind of guy. And I'm going to go to Florida State, and this isn't an unheard of name. Jamie Robinson is a household name, but I think Jamie deserves some love. He's going to be at the Senior Bowl as well. But again, he's got 29-inch arms. He's kind of undersized. You know, he's probably not going to test well off the charts. But there's something about Jamie that makes me want to put him in that same archetype as an Elijah Molden, as a Buda Baker, you know, where they got knocked for the same kind of things. But at some point, Like a dog, it's a dog. Like Buda Baker's one of the best safeties in the NFL for a reason. And I think I kind of see that same. It's hilarious because it's like a vibe check. But that dog in him, you know, Jamie's got that dog in him. But he can play in the nickel. He can play over the top. He's not afraid to step into the box and fit a gap. Like I love Jamie Robinson. And so, you know, if he falls to round end of the round three, early round four, like, yeah, give me that guy on my team. I will take that guy on my football team. So, Jamie Robinson is a guy who, you know, he might get knocked in the draft, but he's going to come in and he's going to contribute day one to an NFL football team. And I would take that guy on my team every day of the week.
Yeah, and I like how we kind of finished it off with guys that are not going to be first or second round picks, because I think that kind of gets lost in draft talk a little bit. Everyone wants to talk quarterbacks, everyone wants to talk receivers and those skill positions, but there are guys that got to fill out those rosters. And every year we see it, you know, a fifth, sixth, seventh round guy, you know, ends up being a key contributor. And, you know, prime example of that, you look at the Commanders, Derek Forrest was a guy that I think went round five or six, came in, worked, and now he's playing. Cameron Curl is another example on that same team. So these guys are, you know, may not be the premier or marquee guys, but they're going to be important for teams going down the road. And the more you hit on those day three players, the better you're off your team is, because you obviously you want to see those day one and day two players contribute, but the more you can get those guys turned into something more than just backups or core special teamers, I think that's when you really start to hit the jackpot. So I'm very excited to talk, you know, going forward of not only about some of the stars in the class, but some of the guys that, you know, kind of get lost in the shuffle too.
Absolutely, Kevin. It's been a great first episode. We're back in the seat. This is just the beginning. We're not even done playing college football yet. So the draft season is in its early infancies, although it's always draft season, so you could say it's about it's at its midlife right now. But just at the beginning, you know, we got a great slate of games. We'll get into the college football playoffs and then straight into the pre-draft process. Well, we'll talk combine, we'll talk pro days, we'll talk any rumor that's out there, any news that's out there. But we're just getting started, and it's great to be back in the seat. It's great to have you here with me to get this Daft on Draft podcast off the ground.
Yeah, for sure, man. Excited to continue this going forward, and like I said, it's just the beginning. But very looking very forward to you know, being able to do this every week, and you know, maybe we'll continue to ramp it up as the draft season intensifies.
I'm doing my best to restrain myself from letting a let's ride go as we exit the podcast. So, until next time.